Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the May 24th edition of the Journal, and we'll start with the first page stories. Tuscola's school district receives $1 million tax bump by Dominic Stallings. Tuscola School District received a large payment over $1 million in personal property replacement taxes, PPRT, last month, according to Superintendent Gary Alexander. The payment brought the total PPRT revenue to over $4.5 million. It's a lot more than estimated, said Alexander. But he added that people shouldn't expect large numbers like that going forward. However, he still appreciates the revenue which has been added to the amended tentative budget, which can be viewed for 30 days before the next budget hearing in June. In the amended tentative budget, which was approved in the meeting, were also changes to ESSER expenditures as well as other miscellaneous budget items. Tuscola School Board swore in and welcomed its new members, Rusty Yadis, Judson Wienke, at the May 24th School Board meeting. At the meeting, the board approved the retirements, resignations of Beth Gibson, a teacher at East Prairie, Chris Brown, TCHS cheer coach, Beth Pugh as TCH girls cross country and EP volleyball coach, Stephanie Goodwin as East Prairie educator, Denise Brown at the end of 2025-26, and Angela Bergner at the end of 2025-26. The board also recognized kindergarten teacher Jenny Porter and fourth grade teacher Robin Rauch, who will retire at the end of the coming week. They'll receive plaques later this week. The board approved several new hires, Caden Bayer as assistant for junior high school basketball, Marie Grant and Jennifer Lutz as junior high student council sponsors, Kayla Shelmadine as paraprofessional for 2023-24, Natasha Smith as paraprofessional for 2023-24, summer workers for 2023, Emily Griswell as TCHS volleyball coach and Nicholas Ross as a school counselor. Megan Price's transfer to East Prairie was also approved. The board approved the 2023-2024 district insurance. Alexander noted that the insurance total increased by $25,000, mostly due to property value increases. The last time Illinois Risk Management Insurance, an independent appraiser, did the last appraisal, the entire school property was valued at about $49 million. The most recent appraisal raised the value to $81 million. In the plan, workers' compensation insurance dropped by $3,200 and cyber increased by $3,500. Student accident insurance was also reduced, but Alexander didn't have an exact figure. He noted that it dropped because the district is coming off claims from previous years when the district had large claims. The board approved the consolidated district plan. Alexander explained that the plan is something they've done over the last 4 years. It's supposed to streamline work for the board, but in Alexander's opinion, it creates more work than it streamlines. He added that it has to be approved in order for the board to be able to apply for grants. The board approved the 2023-2024 lunch fees, which have increased by 10%. Alexander said federal auditors recommend an increase every year and may push for higher increases if fees aren't increased. The board approved the 2023-24 contract with Aramark, the food service provider that has been part of the Tuscola School District for over 20 years. The contract price increased by 11% and included a $2 hourly raise for wages. The company is in charge of hiring kitchen staff for the schools. Scott Gregory, district manager for Aramark, presented to the board with upcoming menu changes and general values for the company. Gregory reiterated that they try to work as closely with students to provide meals that they enjoy while also providing meals with enough calories and nutrients. Board Secretary Daryl Spillman added that he had good experiences dealing with the company. They listened to his request and did their best to make changes. The company is also expecting high surpluses, which will allow the district to push the program further. The company is expecting to roll out a mobile app so that students can get instant feedback on meals. The board approved the IASB membership for 2023-2024, which increased to $4,875. Alexander explained that the membership allows board members to attend training sessions. The board also said it allows access to feel-good meetings. The membership also ensures that policies are looked at by lawyers and ensures that they are updated. The press policy 111 was also given to board members for review. The press policy essentially is a policy guidebook and guides the board to make changes and have lawyers review policies to ensure they are in compliance. Alexander said the final reading will be at the next meeting. The next first page story, Tuscola Pool Opening Likely to Be Delayed, by David Porter. The Tuscola swimming pool opening will likely be delayed, City Administrator Drew Howell said Monday at the Tuscola City Council meeting. The main circulating pump is busted. Hal said he does not yet have an estimate for the cost of or the time needed to make the repairs. City foreman Danny Cruzan said it's dependent on being able to find the parts that are needed to make the repair. Once the parts are in, the repair should not take long, he said. In other business, the council declared a 2016 police car to be surplus property to be sold. Hull said the car is parked at the South Fire Station with a for sale sign on it. The council approved spending $104,500 for a used bucket truck. It's a 2010 International 105 with a 100-foot extension. Alderman Troy Rund questioned whether spending that much on a truck that is more than 10 years old. Cruzan said he found a two-year-old truck that was priced at $480,000. Hull said the truck has low miles and low hours of usage. He hopes the city will get 10 years out of it. The truck will replace a 1993 model that the city bought, used, and has had for about 10 years. Cruzan said he would ask the council to declare the truck as surplus after the newer truck arrives. The next article is Learning About the U.S. and Spain Through Foreign Exchange by Dominic Stallings. It's going to be hard for Olivia Cole Rubio to go home once again when she walks across the stage during the Tuscola graduation this coming weekend. The sophomore is a transfer student from Alajuela, Spain, which is close to Spain's capital, Madrid. Throughout her year, she had the opportunity to experience some of the best things high school life has to offer: homecoming, prom, the basketball team going to state, and even traveling across the country. Her favorite week during her exchange year was homecoming. Rubio said she had lower expectations for the event since she didn't know what it would be like. For her, homecoming was an exciting surprise. She enjoyed the Powder Puff football and other school events during Spirit Week. Bonfires, dinner, and spending time with friends made the week even better. She also enjoyed prom, which she thought was very much like what she's seen in movies. Another memorable experience for Rubio was going to state for basketball with the rest of the school, as well as Carbondale for the Super Sectionals this year. The trip to Carbondale was filled with excitement as the Warriors grew closer to competing in the state championship. The win for the boys' basketball team gave her and other students a chance to see the state competition at the State Farm Center in Champaign. In Spain, they don't have school-sponsored team sports. Rubio recalled that students who do sports outside of school usually don't get as much support as students do in the States. They usually just go to do whatever they want, possibly with parents, and leave as soon as they're done. Rubio compared her school life to Spain's school system. It was one of the biggest challenges for her when she traveled here. She found it was a bit more fun to attend classes every day in Tuscola because there are more opportunities to spend time with friends or do group projects. In Spain, students end up writing a lot of essays and memorizing information. Rubio said it might seem like they would learn more that way, but for some students, it seems like it's easier to forget all the things they write about. In her opinion, she seems to learn more in class than in the States. In Spain, Rubio is set to graduate as a sophomore due to a different school structure in there. While she's not receiving a high school diploma from Tuscola, she is allowed to walk during graduation with the senior class. Students in Spain typically enter high school or secondary school when they're 11 or 12 years old. In order for students to go to college, they have to attend a baccalaureato, a post-high school education that allows access to universities once the appropriate tests have been completed. For Rubio, school wasn't the only thing that was different for her. Even the most mundane things like houses, roads, geography, and even everyday places like gas stations were quite different. Rubio said she also learned a lot about American culture while living here. She became more used to spending time in the living room with her host family. She usually spends more time in her room in Spain, especially after lunch, when it's nap time. Dinner time is also much earlier for her here. In Spain, she said they would eat dinner with her family at 9 or 10 p.m. Family dynamics have changed a lot for Rubio during her stay in the States as well. Usually, Rubio spent most of her family time on Sundays, and she usually doesn't see her parents until later in the evening during the weekday. With her hosts, Nick and Margie Carter, she finds herself spending a lot more time with her family throughout the week. Rubio said she thinks there are more options of things to do throughout the week here. "Every day I can feel completely different," said Rubio. Her relationship with her host family has grown quite strong throughout the year, even though Rubio was nervous when she met them in person. They all share a similar type of humor, tease each other, and share plenty of laughs. She went to Florida for spring break as well as Wisconsin and Minnesota. She originally hoped to go to Florida with friends, but their plans fell through. Margie and Nick wanted her to still have that experience of traveling in the United States. Rubio had visited Chicago with her agency and with other exchange students. She was able to meet some other foreign exchange students from Spain who were spending their year abroad in Arcola. Day-to-day life also changed for Rubio a lot. She usually spent her days walking a dog after school and traveling to the city center with her friends on the bus, since her hometown of Alajuela is relatively quiet. When Rubio leaves early in June, the Carter family will not be without a foreign exchange student for long. They're going to host Rubio's younger brother, Lucas, who will be attending TCHS this fall. Olivia was surprised since she didn't think he wanted to do an exchange year. She said he thought it wouldn't be fun to go abroad for the school year since he'd be mostly studying, but after hearing Olivia's experiences from her parents, he seems to have changed his mind. Olivia's dad encouraged her to go to the States as he always wanted her to have that opportunity. I think when I really adapted myself here was around Christmas, Rubio said. When she called home around that time, she wanted to come home and visit her family and friends, but now she wouldn't mind repeating the last 2 months of Tuscola High School. She still wants to spend her summer in Spain with her friends and family, but she wouldn't mind coming back to the States for another year of school. She's even considered moving back to the U.S. one day, maybe not Illinois, as she said, since she can't stand the cold weather here. And the last first page article, A Look Ahead with 2023 VG Valedictorian and Salutatorian by Tony Hooker. When speaking with Luke Zimmerman and Jesse Bissent, it quickly becomes apparent that their personalities are quite different. Luke, the VGHS class of 2023 valedictorian, is gregarious and outgoing, seemingly seeking opportunities to engage and help his fellow man. Jesse, the VGHS salutatorian, on the other hand, is much more reflective. I recently caught up with the pair to talk about their paths to academic success, what their future holds, and much more. For both boys, the pursuit of academic excellence has been ongoing for most of their academic careers. Luke said he started focusing on homework around third grade, and Jesse reported a similar awakening. Both students were quick to point out the role of their parents that played in their dedication to the books. My parents basically told me that I had to get good grades if I wanted to do something with my life, so I just focused on it. It was about the same for me, Bissett stated. My parents just told me to get good grades, and I listened. For Zimmerman, one key yet often unrecognized factor weighing in on his academic success over the years. A little bit of it is blind luck, he said when asked about the keys to his performance. It helps when you're smart and to an extent. Of course, he also realized that hard work was the main contribution. I do study quite a bit, and if I don't know something, I go in and ask about it and learn it, and then I'm ready for the test. Bissent too stated that hard work was the key. If you understand it, you understand it. And if you don't force yourself to go through study, because focusing on the future is really important for that. For each, good time management is a necessary skill. Besides his academics, Bissent has a part-time job at the Tri-City CC and was a member of the golf team, while Zimmerman participates in seemingly every sport, as well as helping with Villa Grove Special Olympians, FFA, and many other activities. Interestingly, the two young men's dedicated time to study has been different over the years. I'm studying 1.5 to 2 hours every night, or at least every other this year, Bissent stated. Before senior year, I didn't have that much to do. Zimmerman, on the other hand, says that he has had a relatively smooth senior campaign. Last year, I had a loaded schedule and I was putting in 2 hours of study almost every night, but this year it's a bit lighter, he said. Both young men are planning on heading out of state to continue their education, with Zimmerman headed to the University of Wyoming and Bissent cruising south to attend Florida Gulf Coast University. The trip to Wyoming represents a significant change for Zimmerman, who had originally indicated his intention to attend Grinnell College in Iowa and play football. The catalyst for the change was his being awarded the very first Paul and Carlene Turner University of Wyoming scholarship, which will pay 100% of his tuition and fees for all 4 years of his bachelor's degree. For Jesse, the trip to FGCU was a bit more circuitous. I grew up watching a lot of nature documentaries on TV, Bissent said, a future oceanographer, stated. When a vacation trip to Florida included a stop at the Fort Myers School, his journey toward becoming an eagle began. My mom has a friend whose daughter attends, so when we were in Florida, we visited the campus and I fell in love with it. Zimmerman plans on majoring in animal science with an ag business minor during his time as a cowboy. Interestingly, both students have an eye on making working with animals a part of their careers, though through very different means. Bissent wants to work with marine biology in hopes of someday synthesizing a medicine from some aquatic animal, while Zimmerman's goal is to start a meat processing company with knowledge he's gained from a lifetime of cattle raising in addition to his studies. Both young men feel a strong commitment to helping others in different ways. Zimmerman, who recently chaperoned a group of 7th grade science students on a canoe trip, is quick to point out all the blessings in his life and feels that he has an obligation to give back. I've been really blessed with having the ability to do a lot of things, and I feel a passion to spread that to others and make sure that everyone has an opportunity to feel special. For rather shy and reserved Jesse, however, he gives his time to other species. I'd love to volunteer, but I'm so shy when I do. It's usually has to do something with animals. For Besant, the key to being able to maintain such a packed schedule while having some semblance of a high school life is through diligent planning. I like to plan ahead a lot of scheduling. Have to make sure this and that are going before I can agree to something else. That's just how I live, week to week, by planning ahead. Zimmerman, however, freely admits not being a good planner and just tries to utilize every available minute of every day. You don't take too many breaks or sit back. You go to practice, you come home, you do your homework, you eat, you go to bed. If you have some time on your weekends, you hang out with your friends, and that's what you do. The future is wide open for these two, but both have an idea of where they hope to be in the coming 10 years. I'm hoping to be on a reef somewhere, Besant stated, and for Zimmerman, his hope is to have a farm of his own. I'm hoping to have my company started and have a farm of my own and be working that. Two bright young men with bright futures, futures that prove that you can attend a small school and still have big dreams. We'll move now to the obituaries. Reuben D. Yutzi, 90, of Arthur, passed away at 2:04 a.m. on Sunday, May 14, 2023, at the Arthur home. Visitation was held Wednesday, May 17, at the North Vine Mennonite Church, Arthur. Funeral service was held Thursday, May 18, at the church. Pastor Brian Petersheim and Pastor Mike Helmuth officiated. Burial was in the Arthur Cemetery. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with the arrangements. Rebecca J. Olson, 50, passed away peacefully on Friday, May 12, 2023, at her home in Villa Grove. A celebration of Becky's life was held Friday, May 19, at Victory Church in Camargo. The memorial service was Saturday, May 20, at Victory Church, with Pastor Dwayne Piercy officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Becky Olson Memorial Fund at the Villa Grove State Bank. Edna J. Chup Schrock, 90 years old, 10 months, 29 days, of Arcola, passed away on Tuesday, May 16, 2023, at her daughter's residence in Windsor, Missouri. Funeral services were held Saturday, May 20, at Marcus Gingrich's residence, Rural Arthur. Bishop Irvin Miller officiated. Burial was in the Yoder Cemetery in Rural Arthur. Visitation was held Thursday, May 18, and Friday, May 19, at Marcus Gingrich's residence. The Edward Funeral Home assisted with the family. Glenna D. Harris, 85, of Atwood, passed away at 10:25 a.m. Monday, May 15, 2023, at the Arthur home in Arthur. Celebration of life services were held Friday, May 19, at the United Church of Atwood, with the Reverend Mike Drake officiating. Visitation was held Thursday, May 18, at the church, and prior to the service on Friday at the church. And because this is still Military Month, there is an article about former Tuscola GI killed. Master Sergeant Gerald Peeler, 36, a former Tuscola resident, was killed in action in Vietnam Sunday, according to word received by relatives. The body will be returned to Atlanta, Georgia, for burial. Born April 4, 1932, at Arcola, Peeler was the son of John and Sylvia Peeler. He attended Tuscola schools, where he was known to his classmates as Tiptoe. He served in the Army since about 1950. His overseas service included two tours of duty in South Korea, Germany, and Japan. Sergeant Peeler was sent to Vietnam in January. His brother John also began an assignment in Vietnam recently. Sergeant Peeler was married to Elizabeth Johnson in 1954. She and four children survived. His mother preceded him in death. And there's an additional article about this. Military Month, Sergeant William Gerald Peeler, by Carolyn Cloud. Not a day goes by that we don't think of you and miss you. You will always be our hero. This was an article on May 9th, 1951, Decatur Daily Review noted that on May 15th would mark the beginning of the last round of activities for Tuscola High School seniors, starting that day with a trip to Turkey Run State Park for Senior Skip Day. There will also be a junior-senior reception and dance on May 19th, followed by Honors Day on May 23rd. The class commitment ceremony was scheduled for May 26th, and the whirlwind of activity would end the baccalaureate ceremony for the senior class on May 27th. Absent from these rites of passage for the Tuscola class was one classmate, William Gerald Peeler, although Peeler's twin brother, Charles Harold Peeler, was a member of the graduating contingent. Gerald was a world away from his former classmates, literally and figuratively. Another article dated May 29, 1951, from the Decatur Herald, reported that the parents of Private William Gerald Peeler had just received word that he had been injured while serving with the U.S. Army in Korea. William Gerald and Charles Harold Peeler, or Gerald and Harold as they were known, were born in Arcola on their mother's 22nd birthday, April 5th, 1932. Their parents, John Albert Heeler and Sylvia Lydia Connor, were both born in Hinsborough, John in 1908 and Sylvia in 1910. They were married on March 2nd, 1929 and settled in Arcola. They would have five sons and two daughters in all. One daughter born in 1937 died shortly after her birth. The growing Peeler family moved several times, most likely due to John Peeler's work as a farm laborer. Census records show the family living in Arcola, Hinsborough, and Bowery County. Gerald attended 1 year in Tuscola, his sophomore year in 1950, where his classmates called him Tiptoe. Before the school year was over, on April 20, 1950, he enlisted in the U.S. Army. In June 1950, North Korea invaded South Korea, drawing the United States into another war, and by the end of the year, Gerald Peeler found himself serving with the 1st Cavalry Division in Northeast Korea. In December, the Peelers received word that Gerald was hospitalized in Busan after his tank, in which he was assistant gunner, had taken a hit and the chief gunner was killed. After escaping, he had walked until his feet gave out and was rescued by British soldiers. Word reached the Peelers about their son's ordeal with the news that he was recovering through the cooperation of international amateur radio operators who relayed the message to station W9PEK in Clinton, where it was sent on to the Peelers in a postcard. Gerald Peeler was injured five times in Korea, while at least one injury was serious. None were life-threatening, and he returned to duty. After returning to the States, Gerald married an Alabama girl, Elizabeth Johnson, in Pisodom on July 17, 1954. Having decided to make a career in the Army, he was soon stationed at Fort McClellan near Anniston, Alabama, where in 1955 their first child was born, a daughter they named Reba. In 1956, Elizabeth and her daughter traveled to Germany to join Gerald in a three-year assignment, and it was there that the Peelers welcomed their first son, John Wesley, in 1957. Upon their return to the States, Gerald was stationed at Fort Benning near Columbus, Georgia, where two more sons, Wayne and William Glenn, were born. On January 7, 1968, Sergeant William G. Peeler deployed to Vietnam, where he served with the B Company, 3rd Battalion, 47th Infantry, 9th Infantry Division, USARV, the U.S. Army of Vietnam, raised in Kien Hào Province. The regiment conducted riverine warfare in the Mekong Delta. Riverine warfare refers to joint operations between Army and Navy forces on waterways and near shore. On September 22, 1968, the base camp where Gerald Peeler was located came under hostile mortar attack, and he was mortally wounded. He was taken to a hospital where he later died. He was 36 years old. At the time of his death, his wife and four children were still living in Columbus, Georgia, near Fort Benning. His father was living at 119 North Sheldon Street in Arcola. His mother had passed away in 1964 after a short illness and was buried at the Arcola Township Cemetery. 3 weeks before Gerald's death, his father married Kalita Bird of Arcola. When John passed away in 1978, he was buried in Arcola next to Sylvia. Gerald Peeler's younger brother, Staff Sergeant John Peeler Jr., born 1933, also honorably served in the U.S. Army in Korea and Vietnam. He passed away in Texas in 1987. Although newspaper articles detailing Sergeant Peeler's service and his death often list him as Tuscola GI, most likely because he had ties to Tuscola shortly before he joined the Army and listed his home of record on his military papers as Arcola. The body of 1st Sergeant William Gerald Peeler was returned to the States, and he was buried at Fort Benning Post Cemetery, where his listing refers to him as 1st Sergeant William Gerald Top Peeler. Memorial service for 1st Sergeant Peeler was held on Saturday, October 19, 1968, at the Arcola Baptist Church in Arcola, with the Reverend John Danforth officiating. Elizabeth Peeler never remarried, and when she passed away on July 7, 2021, she was buried by her husband. During his time in service, Sergeant Peeler earned the National Defense Medal, the Korea Service Medal, the United Nations Service Medal, the Korean Presidential Unit Citation, Army of Occupation Medal, the Vietnam Gallantry Cross Unit Citation, and Valorous Unite Award, the Vietnam Service Medal and Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal, the Republic of Vietnam Campaign Medal, the Army Good Conduct Medal, the Army Commendation Medal, with one oak leaf cluster. The oak leaf cluster denotes an additional medal earned, two Purple Hearts and four leaf clusters, and a Bronze Star medal with one oak leaf cluster. One Bronze Star was awarded for valor, one for merit. In the comments section of the Vietnam Virtual Memorial Fund wall of faces are comments by Gerald Peeler's three sons, such as the one above by his oldest son. The comments remind us of the terrible cost of war, of wives left to carry on, of daughters and sons who barely knew their fathers, and fathers who never got to raise their children. Reba was just 13 years old when her father was killed, and John was just 11. Wayne was 7, and Glenn was just 2 years old. When asked what he would like people to know about his father, Glenn Peeler said he wished he could help, but he was too young to have a father die, to have any real memories, and sadly, both of his older siblings have passed away, his sister in 1982 and his brother, John Wesley, in November 2019. He said all he knew of his father were the stories he heard growing up, but he added he was a great man who loved his country and, more importantly, his family. May has been designated National Military Appreciation Month to honor the sacrifices that have been made on behalf by members of our military. In sharing the story of First Sergeant Peeler, veteran of Korea and Vietnam, we hope to honor all of our service members who served in Korea and Vietnam. And there's an article, State Supreme Court Weighs Assault Weapons Ban, Case Centers on Narrow Question of Illinois State Constitution, by Peter Hancock, Capital City News. The Illinois Supreme Court is now deciding whether the state's recently enacted assault weapons ban violates certain provision of the Illinois Constitution. In March, a circuit court judge in Macon County sided with a group of plaintiffs led by State Representative Dan Calkins, Republican of Decatur, and declared the law unconstitutional. The state appealed directly to the Supreme Court, which put a hold on the Macon County decision and put the case on an expedited schedule. The court heard oral arguments Tuesday in the case. The plaintiffs argued that the law is unfair because it allows certain people but not others to continue buying and selling a category of firearms defined as assault weapons. Plaintiff's attorney, Jerry Stocks, argued that because the law allows some people to continue owning the banned weapons, law enforcement officers, certain security guards, active duty military personnel, and people who already owned these weapons before the law took effect, among others, it violates the state's Constitution Equal Protection Clause. He also argued it violates a ban on special legislation or legislation written for the benefit of one person or group of persons. These are criminal statutes, Stocks told the court, and we're immunizing people who have absolutely no difference in the employment of the Second Amendment or the enjoyment of the Second Article 1, Section 22 of the Illinois State Constitution than anyone else. The Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and Article 1, Section 22 of the Illinois Constitution both deal with the right to bear arms. But the state constitution's language is different because it says the right is subject to police power of the state, meaning it can be regulated to protect public health and safety or law and order. The distinction is important because in federal law, the right to bear arms is considered a fundamental right, and any limitations are subject to strict scrutiny. That means that the government has to show there is a compelling state interest that makes limiting the right necessary and that the law is narrowly tailored to achieve that interest. In Illinois state constitution law, however, the right to bear arms is not a fundamental right, and the government is authorized under the state constitution to put limits on it. That means the government needs only to show the limitations have a rational basis behind them. The purpose of this legislation is to freeze the supply of assault weapons, reduce their further proliferation throughout the state, and to increase public safety, Assistant Attorney General Lee Janig said, arguing for a rational basis review. But Stocks argued that in the most recent case dealing with the Second Amendment, the U.S. Supreme Court has moved beyond the rational basis versus strict scrutiny question. In a decision last summer, the U.S. Supreme Court began using a new standard that requires the state to show that a regulation is consistent with the nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation. The state, however, argued that the federal standard for judging Second Amendment issues should not apply in the Illinois case because the plaintiffs did not make a Second Amendment claim on their initial suit. And Chief Justice Mary Jane Theis appears to agree. That's not what you brought, she told Stocks about his Second Amendment claims. You framed this as a totally different way. You could have joined the other three federal cases. You chose to shape it in a different way around special legislation, and an equal protection is a much different analysis. There's time for a couple of quick notes. The Arthur Rotary Fireworks has become one of the biggest and literally brightest event in the region, and they are looking for sponsors to help pay for the display. There are several different levels of giving, from as little as $50 to more than $5,000. The events this year start off at 4 p.m. Saturday, July 4th, with an evening of entertainment featuring Captain Rad and the Blind Rivets, food vendors, kids' activities, and around 9:30, a moving display of fireworks including hundreds of shells, the ultimate fireball, Vesuvius, and the Wall of Fire, complete with the Rural Patriot. Sponsors will be featured in advertising and receive VIP seating on the west side of the Arthur Levington Atwood Hammond football field. Donations can be made at the State Bank of Arthur. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying see you again next week.